And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. We're going to talk about two interrelated matters today. The coup attempt in Turkey, which was predicted by one of our guests last week on this show. So we're going to ask him back. Safar Bengash will be talking to him about 5:30, why he had this intuition or maybe inside information. We'll put him on the we'll make him tell us how he knew this. And then today at the beginning, we're going to be talking to Stephen Gowans. Stephen has written an article. You can find him at gowans.wordpress.com. And it is titled, Allying with Political Islam, the United States Tactical Alliances with Al-Qaeda and its Associates in Syria. Now, this is, of course, a related matter to what happened in Turkey. One of the reasons we're focusing on it is that if you read today's editorials, the New York Times, Globe and Mail Star, others, they talk about Mr. Erdogan not in the most flattering way. They seem all rather unhappy with him, but they don't talk about Syria. And that's yet Syria is what's at the it's a major factor in what happened in Turkey, undoubtedly. And so what is actually going on there, what the strategy is from Washington and elsewhere is very important for us to probe. And that's what we're going to do because we're going to talk to Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. And again, the title is Allying with Political Islam, the United States Tactical Alliances with Al-Qaeda and its Associates in Syria. Stephen Gowans is joining us now, I think. Are you there, Stephen?
Hello, Phil.
How are you doing? I'm glad you had the time. You start off, and maybe, why don't I read a bit of this? You summarize at the beginning of your article, the New York Times reported that the United States has refrained from systematically attacking Al-Qaeda franchise in Syria because U.S.-backed fighters coordinate and are enmeshed with the outfit. The newspaper also reported that the Pentagon had refrained in 2015 from attacking ISIS militants in and around the Syrian city of Palmyra in order to further U.S. foreign policy goal of regime change in Damascus. The United States has a long history of forming tactical alliances with political Islam to counter secular Arab nationalists whom it views as inimical to its interest of dominating the Arab world with its vast petroleum resources. Syria, whose constitution describes the country as the beating heart of Arabism and the bedrock of resistance against colonial hegemony on the Arab world, is the last of the secular Arab national states opposing U.S. domination and control of the region. Stephen, you know, the stark thing for me when as I read that is that you spelled out Syria is the last of the Arab nationalist regimes. It's true that years ago there were a number of them.
Yeah, there were a number. There was Egypt. There was Iraq. There is Libya. And so we see what's happened to all of those. The United States has taken all of them out. It co-opted Egypt first. It invaded Iraq and toppled the Arab, secular Arab nationalist government in Iraq. And it's even gone further. The constitution or the laws of Iraq now proscribe Arab nationalists from belonging to the government. And the Arab nationalists are represented by the Ba'ath Party. So you may recall they've had the so-called de-Ba'athification process, which is simply a way of rooting out secular Arab nationalism in Iraq. Then they eliminated Gaddafi's government, which was also an Arab nationalist government and a secular one. And they did so, that was interesting, that was done through an alliance of NATO with Islamists, if you recall. Mm-hmm. Gaddafi complained that he was under attack by Al-Qaeda. And, of course, the West dismissed him and said, this is crazy. But, you know,
making these things up.
We've discovered since that, indeed, he wasn't crazy. And you also recall that Canadian Air Force pilots who participated in the NATO bombing of Libya quipped that they were Al-Qaeda's Air Force, which indeed they were.
Yes. Yeah. You know, when you tell a story like that, one wants to stop off and say, we have servicemen who talk this way and continue to have their jobs. But that's, you know, it's always kind of shocking because they're just spilling the beans. Now, this is, again, is Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. The title is Allying with Political Islam, the United States Tactical Alliance with Al-Qaeda and its Associates in Syria. Now, one other point about this thing of allying with political Islam. My memory is also Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it very striking? And I know, given the tenor of your writings, this is one of the most one that stands out because they had a socialist government.
Uh-huh.
People forget in Afghanistan, full rights for women, and they had a program, of course, of serving the people because that's a socialist concept.
Uh-huh.
And who was in the mountains but U.S. operatives, Mr. Brzezinski, the entire news team of CBS. I remember Dan Rather with his little beard running up and down the hill saying that he was with the Mujahideen. They really found gold here with this trick.
Yeah, and what happened in Afghanistan is very similar to what's going on in Syria. Very similar. I mean, as you mentioned, the government in Afghanistan was secular. It was socialist, and it was a modernizing force. It's not often acknowledged that the government, or at least the Ba'athist party in Syria, is also socialist, not in the same way that the Afghan government was socialist. It was a Marxist socialist government. The Syrian government adopts something called Arab socialism,
mm-hmm.
but it's still socialist in its orientation. So in that respect, there's a similarity. Another similarity is we had the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, which is kind of like an internationalist political Islamic movement that sought to topple a government because it was atheist and un-Islamic and therefore had to be toppled. Well, exactly the same thing is happening in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
We have jihadists from around the world, around the Muslim world, converging on Syria to topple a government which is considered heretical,
mm-hmm.
And un-Islamic. Mm-hmm. And considered heretical, well, heretical because some of the principles in the government are Alawi,
mm-hmm.
who certain Sunni fundamentalists regard as heretics, and in some cases regard heresy as a crime punishable by death.
Mm-hmm.
And then
very definitely, based on their conduct, we've witnessed some of the horrible acts that these guys carry out.
Yes, and then there's the view that because the government is secular and not Islamic, that it's an affront against Islam because the state ought to be based on Islam and Sharia law, which it is not. So very similar.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is Stephen Gowans, and you quote, and by the way, all this writing is very recent. This is July 14. That's Bastille Day, and, of course, that's when a lot of the shocking events were going on. It has everyone's attention, all these headlines. On July 14th, the New York Times article said that they acknowledged that the U.S., as opposed to the Kremlin's military intervention in Syria, because they're focusing attacks on al-Qaeda franchises in Syria, which the U.S. wants protected. And, you know, this is the Times itself. Do they read their own papers? I mean, how can you there be a war on terror, and yet you are complaining when the Russians strike at identifiably terrorist organizations?
Yes. And so here's the narrative they're kind of propagating, which is, and it's completely deceptive, but if you're ISIS or Al-Nusra, you're a terrorist. Okay, so they'll acknowledge that. If you're neither of these, you're not a terrorist, regardless of whether you refrain from attacks on non-combatants. But then they say, but don't harm al-Nusra because they're an effective force against the Syrian government. And if you eliminate al-Nusra, well, you'll eliminate the armed opposition, and U.S. forces are embedded with al-Nusra, so you can't attack al-Nusra for so many reasons. We don't want you attacking our U.S. forces. And the implication is that the U.S. forces are not terrorists. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't follow. I mean, if it's the case, and this has been documented repeatedly in, you know, mainstream newspapers in the United States, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, that U.S.-backed rebels are, and they use various words, they say they're enmeshed with al-Nusra, or they cooperate with al-Nusra, mm-hmm. or they fight alongside of al-Nusra, or they coordinate with it, they share arms with it, they operate under license to it, mm-hmm. and they're ideologically similar to mm-hmm. al-Nusra, which, you know, we should call al-Nusra what it is, which is al-Qaeda in Syria.
It's kind of a Pepsi and Coke problem.
So, I mean, if the U.S.-backed fighters are fighting alongside of al-Qaeda, then it kind of follows that it's pretty likely that they're using the same methods that al-Qaeda does. And if you've designated the methods of al-Qaeda as terrorists, then it must be the case that the U.S.-backed fighters are engaged in terrorism as well. Now, to reinforce that point, something that I just happened upon today, I probably noticed it before, but I'd forgotten about it. But in 2013, President Obama waived a provision of federal law designed to prevent the supply of arms to terrorist groups to clear the way for the U.S. to provide military assistance to so-called vetted groups fighting the Syrian government. So, you know, Obama's waiving of the arms to terrorist ban amounts to a White House admission that the fighters that the United States is backing are terrorists. Mm-hmm. Why would you waive the ban mm-hmm. unless you're providing arms to a terrorist group?
Yeah. Well, they make us live with these fictions, which are it becomes irritating to sort of play along with the language. Where they say that they're going to give $500 million to arm and train non-extremist groups. And then they tell us, well, it turns out only we weren't able to train any. We had five guys, but they ran away. And by the way, they all took the weapons we gave them and gave them to the extremists. Yeah. So if the audience will be patient, then we will have another $500 million and start again. And it really exposes the political bankruptcy of the U.S. political culture and Canadian. No one ever asks any pertinent question about why all these terrible things are being committed in our name. In American politics, I don't know of a voice. I mean, maybe Dennis Kucinich, but it doesn't happen. And what you lay out in your article is it's so patently clear that the U.S. is lying. I mean, that was one of the things I have to ask you is how could anybody like the Russians or Iran or anybody entering into talks with America have any confidence that they're dealing with someone who could deliver because they lie out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, this policy of saying we're not going to attack certain elements and we're against extremism, and yet they say, well, we want a political resolution. It's not possible, is it? I mean, you're dealing with a state, and number one state, U.S., they're flat out lying.
Yeah, they are flat out lying, and I think that Robert Fisk, the veteran Middle East correspondent from The Independent, kind of underscored the extent to which they're lying by talking about. I think he wrote something like, "And then we went to war with ISIS, which we were outraged about, and called it a fascist organization, and we went to war with ISIS." except when ISIS was attacking Syria, in which case we did absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a complete deception, but I think what's important here is Washington creates the impression that it's one of its goals or one of its major goals in Syria is the removal of terrorists, the war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
But the principal goal in Syria is the removal of Arab nationalists, not terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in Syria, there's considerable support being given to terrorists, and terrorists are a very useful tool for the United States in pursuing its principal objective, which is removing Arab nationalist forces, which stand in the way of the complete domination of the Arab world's vast petroleum resources.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, now as you point out in this article, this is the last nationalist state. And could you review for us a little bit, what is it about the posture of the Syrian government that galls America the most, determines it that it has to remove this government? And by the way, remembering that the President of the United States and John Kerry still they haven't abandoned that position. They're dictating the president has to stand down, which is bizarre. But what is it about Syria and beyond, I mean, nationalists, but in its policies that bothers the U.S.?
Yeah, well, I think that you answered the question at the outset of the interview when you said that, the Syrian constitution defines Syria as the beating heart of Arabism and the bedrock of resistance against colonial hegemony on the Arab world, including its natural resources. So it's essentially saying, we're not going to let you, the United States, dominate us, and we're certainly going to work against you dominating the entire Arab world and subjugating it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they don't like. When you say things like that, you're not going to be fine.
By the way, there used to be a label. Going to this theme, to flesh it out, there used to be this label of the resistance states. I think Syria is the last of the resistance states, too, is it not? When I say resistance to an imposed peace settlement involving Israel and Palestinians.
Yeah, the last of the Arab states that are resisting. Then we have some groups that are organized or associated, allied with Syria. There's Hezbollah in mm-hmm. Lebanon, which is an Arab sub-state resistance mm-hmm. organization. And then there's Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, I've been looking at some of the pretexts that the United States has used to justify its hostility against Syria. And if you go back to 2003, not widely known, but the United States had added Syria along with Cuba and I can't recall now. But anyway.
Probably North Korea.
No, well, we had the original axis of evil.
Yes.
And then they expanded that with three more countries. So there was, Cuba, Syria, and another, which I can't... Oh, Libya, which, of course,
mm-hmm.
they've eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the justification? The justification was that all of these countries are trying to acquire weapons of mass destruction, in particular chemical weapons and biological weapons. Which are not really weapons of mass destruction. They don't have as much destructive capability as many of the United States-owned conventional weapons. But mm-hmm. that was the pretext. In 2007, suddenly the pretext changes. And now they start talking about Syria and Hezbollah and Iran together. And the reason for U.S. hostility against these three organizations is that they challenge stability in the Middle East. and you can't come up with a good pretext. Just try, they're destabilizing. And then by 2011, the pretext becomes that Assad is a brutal dictator.
Mm-hmm. Killing his own people. And by the way, that one is their favorite. And it even in the shadow of what's happening now in Turkey, they all say, we all have to get back to this business of stopping the killing in Syria, in which they list the government of Syria, which is a member of the United Nations and et cetera, as equally responsible with the extremist jihadists who are financed by the Saudis and others to actually wage war against Syria. But they lumped them together and keeping alive the idea that they're going to have to intervene. I am hearing also more talk about, once again, of intervention.
Yeah. Intervention. The president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, likes to make the point that there's really little difference between Obama and Bush. Mm-hmm. The only difference is that Bush used his own people, that is the U.S. military, and Obama uses proxies,
mm-hmm.
you know, jihadists and others.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, again, this is Stephen Gallant, gallant.wordpress.com. Stephen, I will have to ask you this because everyone is talking today about Mr. Erdogan. One of the issues that Mr. Erdogan seemed to be having we know the big one was Russia, where he had shot down a Russian plane, or his military did, and they refused to apologize and et cetera. But recently he said he did apologize and said he wanted to improve relations with Russia. But a second thing he was said by his government, and I notice everybody's scrambling around and not discussing it so much, but it was raised by the Saudis. He seemed also to be saying that he wanted to, quote, normalize relations with Syria. Now, I would understand that to mean close the borders. And then shortly after that, we have this kerfuffle with costing several hundreds of lives. Have you been looking at this or making? What do you make of this situation in Turkey? We'd be interested to know.
I'm not sure I can offer at this point much that's particularly enlightening. I think it's interesting, though, as you mentioned, that Erdogan has certainly done an about-face with respect to Russia. Maybe he decided that the sanctions Russia slapped on Turkey were too onerous.
Mm-hmm. He can't please all these masters, right? I mean, he has a number of... I mean, the Saudis only 6 months ago were talking about how they and Turkey, I think the Saudis announced it without asking Turkey, were thinking of putting together an army to invade Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And now they seem to be very unhappy with him. But it certainly, this fits into your thesis here that the room is getting and more narrow and more crowded and more problematic. He can't keep everybody happy. NATO expects certain things from him.
Right.
Being nice to the Russians doesn't seem like a good idea from their point of view, I assume.
Well, you recall his policy a few years ago was to get along with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a falling out with the Israelis. And he's tried a rapprochement with the Israelis. He had his falling out with Russia. Now he has a rapprochement there. And so if he's trying to effect a rapprochement with Syria, that would be consistent with this kind of volte-face that he's mm-hmm. undertaken.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's discovered that things didn't work out in Syria quite the way he thought they would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this business that you describe... is the problem with the groups like ISIS, certainly I have trouble with, is that they're very hard to pin down as to who they actually are and what they actually want. We all see the billboard saying we want a caliphate, which that one popped up out of nowhere. They originally were not calling for a caliphate. It seems to behave in a way that would make you suspect that the U.S. is not merely coping with them, but might actually be kind of coordinating.
They're certainly using them.
I mean, if I were Erdogan and a bomb goes off in Ankara, I would look at Washington rather closely and say, you know anything about that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought we were all working together to bother Assad. I mean, how come this stuff is happening in my backyard?
Right. No, but I would say that certainly the United States is using ISIS to the extent it can to achieve its objectives. And we saw that, and you mentioned at the outset that even acknowledged now by, you know, mainstream sources in the United States that the U.S. has also refrained from systematically attacking ISIS where it's useful for U.S. foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And you know, Assad has been alleging for years that that's exactly what the United States is doing. And there are certain people who interview him from the U.S. networks, for example, who will react in shock when he says, you know, the United States really isn't doing anything to eclipse ISIS within Syria. And they'll say, how could that be? I mean, the United States is leading this grand coalition against ISIS. And Assad will say, well, yes, it's a grand coalition, but before the Russians intervened, ISIS was expanding within Syria.
Yeah, I think the number in your article he cited, I think he said 70 countries said they were going to be fighting to stop ISIS, and nothing happened, he said, until the Russians came.
Yes, and then suddenly the the ISIS was beaten back. So and he's not the only one. I mean, there are other mainstream Western sources. For example, Patrick Coburn, the veteran Middle East correspondent, and Robert Fisk have been saying, you know, this is just it's completely symbolic, mm-hmm. not really an effective, coalition fighting against ISIS. And the reason it isn't is because ISIS is a useful tool for the United States. I think as Assad said that the United States doesn't have the political will to destroy ISIS. But Russia does have the political will, which is why Russia's been far more effective against mm-hmm. ISIS than the United States is.
Now, the point you make, and I really urge people to read this article, gowans.wordpress.com, Allying with Political Islam, the United States Tactical Alliance with Al-Qaeda and its associates in Syria. The Syria is the last of the nationalist governments that was, of course, this all grew out of the struggle against colonialism. And the great name was Abdel Nasser. And I'm remembering, thanks to your article, that, of course, when we had this constitutional struggle and arrest of the president and whatnot in Egypt, people were in the streets with pictures of Nasser. It seems clear. And incidentally, the Nasser period was at a time when the Soviet Union existed. And one could be a nationalist, and the U.S. couldn't just come and smack you. But with Russia being a bigger player, I wonder if you might speculate, I mean, given the strength of Syria, Syria is showing the ability, it's quite resilient. 5 years of fighting, they're still there. And you know, Washington tried to blow their house down. Maybe we're entering a new phase here where this last of the nationalists might turn out to be the first.
Well, that's something we could hope. that's a good point. It's also interesting that there's been a prequel to this. If you go back to 1965, when the Ba'ath Party came to power in Syria, it had a very strong opponent right from the beginning, which was political Islam. In that case, it was the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood, which undertook a violent insurrection against the Ba'athist government, against the Arab nationalists, secular Arab nationalists. And this went on until 1982, and there was a huge fight in Hama, mm-hmm. And there was a great insurrection there. In that case, back in those days, the Syrian government also had Soviet military advisors and was receiving Soviet military assistance, but they managed to quell the uprising. Mm-hmm. But it's always been the case in Syria since the Ba'athists came to power that there's been a great struggle between political Islam and secular Arab nationalism. Mm-hmm. And political Islam, as a countering force against secular Arab nationalism, has been supported by the United States, mm-hmm. mainly through Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very glad you point all this out. I think you've got a rich area of exploration here. I thank you very much. We've been speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.